are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland to America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA.
That. Kinda sweet.
We're broadcasting just to the heartland of America. The rest of you, stop listening.
What's up, Kowalski? Everybody else, tune out.
On the program today, in the wake of the fourth Democratic debate taking place somewhere in Ohio, AOC, Ilhan, and Tlaib endorse Bernie Sanders. Meanwhile, the impeachment inquiry moves forward. Former State Department official McKinley, in a closed-door deposition today and yesterday's testimony, puts Mick Mulvaney in the center of the corrupt White House plan for Ukraine. Meanwhile, Rudy proves the old adage, he who acts as his own attorney has a fool for a client. New ProPublica investigation shows why Donald Trump has been hiding his taxes. It's not because he's not a billionaire. It's because he's perpetrating fraud.
Yeah, there's other things to do with the money, like perpetrate fraud.
Meanwhile, Erdogan cucks Pence and Pompeo. Ilhan Omar introduced a bill to provide universal free school lunch. The new report, investor-owned hospitals are dumping tons of cash into the fight against Medicare for All. Meanwhile, a new report of the Global Hunger Index shows that climate change is driving alarming levels of hunger around the world. And congratulations, labor, you're being taxed now at a higher level than capital for the first time in ever. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. We are all exhausted in studio last night till late in the evening. Although I'm sure Jamie was out even later. But
I was in bed.
In bed, staying awake. So we're all tired, right?
Definitely.
Okay, good. We're all exhausted. But we are here today to give you a bit of a recap on the debate last night and a bit of a update on where we are with impeachment. And these two stories, you know, moving in more or less in parallel, there was the first question of the evening was for every person on stage as to whether the president needs to be impeached. They largely all agreed, as far as I could tell, except for, you know, Tulsi Gabbard sort of gave a slightly convoluted answer, I have to be honest. She both said that it was highly partisan, but that she supports it, but that it's right, but it's a little bit wrong. And so she came out strong with a tremendous amount of ambivalence on that. Everyone else on stage, though, was quite supportive of impeachment. And how could you not be at this point? I mean, both politically and ethically, and I mean, it's quite obvious. You can be suspicious of the CIA, but at this point now, the Intel Committee has heard from multiple members of the State Department, diplomats, career diplomats, who have defied Mike Pompeo and gone in and testified. Some who have resigned, like the guy today resigned and is in there testifying today. And certainly what came out yesterday, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but today they'll hear from Michael McKinley. He was a former senior advisor to Mike Pompeo, but not one that came in with Pompeo. He was already there, a career State Department official. Yesterday, George Kent, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, basically told the lawmakers that all the Ukraine experts were shoved aside in dealing with Ukraine policy by Mick Mulvaney and replaced with Gordon Sondland, who is a hotelier and was the ambassador to the EU.
I would like to see him in a Wes Anderson movie now that you say that.
Exactly. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani.
A simple country lawyer with simple country interests.
Kurt Volker, who was an unpaid emissary with his own sort of strange. And of course, there was one other guy who was in charge of this. I shouldn't necessarily include Rudy in this. Rudy was sort of like the fourth wheel. The third wheel was, of course, Rick Perry, who it was the energy secretary, because they had sort of a side deal going on where they wanted to get members of their buddies on their on a corporate board in Ukraine. And they apparently called themselves the Three Amigos. And of course, you put the Three Amigos in charge of the relationship with Ukraine when you don't want career people who would say like, hey, wait a second, what are you doing? That's not what you're supposed to do with other countries. You don't want them there.
They're the little rascals.
They sort of are. It's absolutely true. Spanky really went too far this time. But at this point, I mean, there's simply no denying what's going on. The question is that I think the Democrats are facing at this point is, do they go ahead and take a vote on this? And I still haven't had my question answered as to whether they can do just a rolling impeachment hearings. Like, we're going to vote on impeachment for this one, and then in 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to vote on impeachment for the next one. Obviously, they're being stonewalled. Giuliani refusing to provide documents. Pompeo refusing to provide documents. Pence refusing to provide documents. Failure to comply with a subpoena. And the question becomes, do you waste time trying to compel their testimony, go into the courts, et cetera, when you already have enough information to impeach the president? Because they clearly do. I mean, frankly, they clearly did before any of this happened.
I have a highly impeachable personality.
It's
sort of prima facie I should be impeached.
Exactly. And so that is the question that the Democrats are trying to figure out right now. And I have to admit, I don't think it's a slam dunk.
I just want to speak this into existence because people love to make Photoshops. The Grand Kiev Hotel.
There you go.
Oh, yes. I love it.
Think about it.
The Grand Kiev. Yeah. Grand Budapest. Wes Anderson theme. I'm digging
it. I see what you're saying. All right. Yeah. I mean, something's going on there.
It's
going
to be so whimsical.
Dear
Very
diary.
Rich in colors. All right,
no,
so,
Mr. President, you cannot.
Meanwhile, we have another burgeoning disaster in northern Syria, which is not to say that what's been taking place in Syria for the past 8 years, 9 years, hasn't been a disaster. But the real challenge with Syria in terms of, or I should say, the only challenge to a large extent that I think the United States could have played throughout this has been to make sure that it doesn't turn into a wider conflict. And that would have involved providing a lot more resources for refugees escaping Syria. And in this instance, leaving the 100 troops that were there and basically telling Turkey, like, hey, no, you cannot go in. Not happening.
And they should have supported an earlier diplomatic process with Assad and the Kurds. Instead of holding out on this regime change nonsense, right, which has been over for years, practically speaking. And so there's a lot of crocodile tears there as well.
But now we are looking at a situation where we could be on the brink of some form of ethnic cleansing and genocide. I guess to a certain extent, it depends on how much Assad feels that they want to fight Turkey at this point. Here's Donald Trump basically assuring everybody that he's got his guys on it and they're going to take care of it. And he's going to send some tough words to Turkey because I apparently didn't do that on the phone with Erdogan. And but look at all the tough guys behind me.
God, he's such a bitch.
Yeah, here he is. Like, he's going to.
That's what Erdogan said.
It's honestly like, oh, we getting a hockey team coming here?
Straight out of Central Casting.
All right, beautiful. Put them behind me. We're tough guys. We're like the Jets, but not like the football team, like the Jets and the Sharks. And not the hockey Sharks.
No, I could have played pro hockey.
Jets. We're the Jets and the Sharks. We're going to tell Erdogan what's what.
Yeah, they're going to do a menacing
thing. This is yesterday.
Mike is getting ready to make a big trip. He'll be leaving tomorrow. We have a delegation leading today, and Mike is heading it up with Secretary Pompeo. They'll be leaving tomorrow. And we're having very strong talks with a lot of people.
Pause. He's announcing that Pompeo and Pence are going to Turkey tomorrow. That is today. He announced this yesterday, and they're going to talk to a lot of people.
Strong talks.
Tough talk. Tough talk.
Strong talks with a lot of people. We want to bring our soldiers back home after so many years. And they're the greatest warriors in the world. They're policing. They're not a police force. They're a different kind of a force. We want to bring our soldiers back home.
Different kind of force.
And we're being very tough.
Tough.
On Turkey and a lot of others.
So tough.
They have to maintain their own properties now. They have to maintain peace and safety.
We'll see
what happens.
Maintain
the delegation. We're asking for a ceasefire.
Ceasefire.
We put the strongest sanctions that you can imagine, but they get a lot. We have a lot in store if they don't. If they don't have an impact.
Pause it for 1 second. Okay, so they're the strongest sanctions you can imagine, but we have a lot more where that came from. If they don't have any impact, and so he's going there, telling them he's calling for a ceasefire. He just called for a ceasefire. He's sending his vice president and Mike Pompeo in to get a ceasefire from Turkey. Continue.
In store if they don't have an impact, including massive tariffs on steel. They ship a lot of steel to the United States.
Steel.
They make a lot of money shipping steel. They won't be making so much money. I just want to tell you that.
There you go. We got so many things in store for them. Let's just see what Erdogan, this guy who's got about to get some tough stuff coming to him today, what he has to say.
He's going
to
be very scared that I talked like that.
And he's going to watch out. Uh-oh, here's a clip of Erdogan. Hope he doesn't soil himself because of the tough talk.
It's going to be embarrassing.
The American delegation is coming here. Are you worried about it? Will you be seeing them?
American delegation is coming. Bunun için endişeliyiz.
Yo, niye endişeli oldun?
Why would we concerned about it?
What will you be saying to them?
Ne, onlara neler diyeceksin?
Ben dimdik ayaktayım. Ben onlarla görüşmeyeceğim.
I'm standing. I'm not going to talk to them.
Onlar karşıtlarıyla görüşecek.
They will be talking their counterparts.
Ben Trump geldiği zaman konuşurum.
When Trump comes here, I'll be talking.
He's a gangster.
There you go. I don't know if
Erdogan
people heard
is
that.
What Trump wants to be so badly.
What he said was, why would we be worried? And she said, well, they're coming here. And he goes, I'm not going to be meeting with them. They're going to meet with their counterparts. I'm not going to talk. I'll talk to Trump if he shows up. That's it. Tough talk. Well, you steal. You're going to lose your steal.
He doesn't care. I mean, it's so amazing. Just the typology. Like, Bolsonaro is a freak and a weirdo who worships Trump, so he can sort of have that dynamic with him. But Modi and Erdogan just know exactly how to play Trump for their purposes, like, every single time.
Yeah, they're the big kids.
They just cucked him. And
excuse me,
so
Modi and Erdogan, right?
Here is, this is pure. This is the Donald Trump let the genie out of the bottle, as it were. And he is not going to be able to stuff it back in. And that is a real problem.
Tough talk.
That is a real problem. I mean, you know, I don't know if this will be that moment, but at one point, the total incompetence catches up with you. There's, I mean, clearly what we've seen with this experiment where you put in just a rancid Chauncey Gardner into the presidency. We have seen that, you know, this experiment, we're seeing it play out. How much of the institutions that make up the United States government, how much inertia is there? And starting to get the sense that the inertia, the things are starting to sputter a little bit. And this is without a major crisis, or at least one that wasn't self-inflicted. But we will keep a tabs on this, obviously. One of today's sponsors is News Voice. It's the first ever entirely open, crowdsourced, and democratized platform for news. You can download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. As you know, the vast majority of news owned by the same five huge corporations. It's important for you, for all of us, to understand where the news is coming from that we are reading. Who owns which media outlets, which political biases may be in play. I mean, it's fine to read this stuff, but you always got to know the assumptions that undergird it. And that's what News Voice helps you keep track of. It's a free crowdsourced website and mobile app. Lets you create personalized news feeds and maintain a clear picture of where your news is coming from and what political slants may exist. Helps you aggregate news from corporate outlets, international outlets, local news, and independent media. It gives you access to every side of every story. It's fueled by a community of users who contribute to the News Voice platform by fact-checking, submitting stories and sources that are missing, upvoting stories, and writing story summaries. You can also comment on stories and debate politics with other members of the community. Through staying active in the community, you can level up, earn perks on the platform. The News Voice Play feature lets you listen to your personal news feed every day through customizable audio news playlists. It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. News Voice is a next-generation news aggregator and social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and productive political discussions. Couple of stories today in my stack. Pulled it from News Voice. It's just, it's going to give you a cross-section of news. I mean, in some ways, it's, you know, I've done this with my Twitter feed, where I have sort of, over the years, curated the different news sources that I think will give me a balance of, in different perspectives on different stories. News Voice does it for you. You don't have to do this for 15 years to figure out who you should be following on Twitter. You get totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. I put a link underneath this video. If you're watching on YouTube, we have one in the podcast description. Check it out. Also, Babbel will get you speaking a new language quickly and, most importantly, with confidence. Choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, and Italian. Speak your new language within weeks. What else they have? Russian and Portuguese, right? Do we know what the other languages are?
Russian, Portuguese, French.
French, yes. Italian, Spanish. Italian. I said those. Swedish? Turkish? Seriously? Dutch, Polish.
Learn how to say I won't be meeting with anybody besides Trump in Turkish.
If that you want to do a good Erdogan impression, here's your opportunity.
I had to brush up on it. I would like to do an Erdogan impression.
Babbel's teaching method and their speech recognition technology has been proven to be effective across multiple studies. The lessons, Babbel's lessons, they're created by real human beings. Over 100 language experts. So no translation machine, no algorithms, no rigidity. These are created by language experts. They're engaging and convenient. They last only about 10 to 15 minutes. You can learn through interactive dialogue so you can perfect your pronunciation and your accent, make you feel like you have a friend too. Babbel is available as an app or online. You use your progress. It syncs across all of your different devices. We're going to get this on. We're going to do the language challenge. We're all sitting here talking about, like, I want to learn Spanish. I want to learn, well, everybody seems wants to Spanish. Portuguese? Oh, yeah. Michael wants to learn Portuguese. Because you listen to the show, Babbel has a special offer for you. Go to babbel.com, select the language of your choice. Once you try for free and are ready to sign up, select the 3-month option. Babbel will give you an additional 3 months for free with the promo code MAJORITY. So that's 6 months for the cost of 3. That's 2 for 1 for those of you who don't know math. With the promo code MAJORITY, Babbel, BABBEL.com. Enter promo code MAJORITY. Babbel, speak a new language with confidence. All right, let's get into this debate review. You will hear today, if you turn on the cable news, that Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg have really, they just shined. And now look, obviously, if you've listened to this program for more than 5 minutes over the course of the past 9 years, you will know that all of us here would receive that information with great skepticism. We watched the debate. Amy Klobuchar, the only thing I can tell you that really stuck out for me was that she had a sort of like a comedy hook on every one of her responses. And by comedy, I mean something that's not funny. She had just some, it was like,
real, you know, Michael Scott energy there.
Imagine working for her. And in addition to like, you've just been forced to shave your legs.
Okay.
And now you get to laugh at the jokes.
I don't think that the jokes are hers. Like, I don't think
they're Bill Maher's.
No, but
they're Bill
Maher's. But I don't, it's not just that I don't think the jokes are hers. I don't think she jokes that way in real life. Because what it clearly is a way they have internal polling. This is my guess that says that comes off as too harsh and uptight. And the stories about her being a bad boss, we need to show that you are a happy warrior. And so they come up, honestly, because these are so canned.
I think you're right.
That this is so deliberate. Like, it's not one of those, like, let's let Amy be Amy. It's like, let's manufacture Amy because here's the thing.
She should ask for her money back.
She should ask for her money back because she's not going anywhere. Anywhere. She's not going anywhere. And she is dancing. I mean, it's not.
I'm having so much fun.
Yes, look at me. I'm signaling fun.
You don't think that that's authentic? You don't think that that's Amy being Amy, bro?
Buttigieg actually, I think, sort of also just a lot of pablum. I do think that's who Buttigieg is, though. I have 100. To say.
He is a walking McKinsey chart.
And
he's like one of those Russian dolls that's just the same doll all the way down to the bottom, and then there's nothing.
Exactly. But I will say this. I do think Buttigieg may, and then he, you know, his numbers have been, I think this is a guy who could do well in Iowa. Could. I wouldn't say it's a 50% chance, but I would say it's in the 40s. He could do well in Iowa, which could have implications on the race going forward. But beyond that, I don't think the debate is going to change anything. The top line here, Bernie looked strong, which was important, and basically won the debate by announcing the endorsements before the debate was over.
And he was fantastic. I mean, honestly,
when
I think
he
this
was allowed
his best,
to
well, it was important. Yes,
I think this is the best debate I've seen Bernie deliver in his whole presidential career.
Yes,
to be
we're going
to
play some clips. Important for him to come out and show that the heart attack was not in any way impacting his ability to campaign. Warren took a lot more heat than she has in the past, but it also, on some level, probably helps her insofar as it drew a distinction between her and people like Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Kamala Harris to some extent. And we're going to play this key difference between the two of them
in a moment. Oh, and it shows that Biden's star is falling, too.
Well, it's a function of Biden starting falling, and there's a perception that she's the front leader and they're going after her. Biden also had probably what was his best night. And part of that, I think, what it shows is that Joe Biden chokes under pressure. And that is something to be very concerned about. Because, I mean, he did well last night, but nobody challenged him. And to the extent that he was challenged, it was the one time that he was incoherent. And so this is indicative, I think, of a problem that Joe Biden has. But now let's get to the clips. I don't think there was anything else really of great merit. Oh, the other thing, just to put to buttonhole this little digest of the debate. One fun fact, Tom Steyer was on stage. Tom Steyer has raised $48 million in this campaign, which is pretty impressive. But if you go to the next level of understanding his fundraising, you find out he actually raised, what was it, $3 million and put in $45 of his own. And here's the thing. I'm sorry. Yeah, he had $49 million. He has spent $47 million on this campaign.
And maybe we need a solution to it that risks the imagination of a new kind of possibility.
$47 million to get on that stage. Most of you did not even know he was running. Most of you did not know he was eligible. I would say 85% of the people watching that debate were not even aware that he was going to show up that day. It cost him $37,000 per word that he spoke in that debate. But I just want you to contemplate something. We heard a lot during that debate about whether billionaires should exist. I don't know if there is a more perfect example of how wasteful and stupid a billionaire could be than someone who spends $48 million, presumably in pursuit of promoting politics that have nothing to do with him, but are to save the country, as he said. And all it amounts to is $37,000 per word that he gets to speak on that debate stage. And for the life of me, I can't remember one single word he said. It was a completely useless endeavor. And had he spent that $48 million on state houses in Colorado and Arizona and Virginia and, I don't know, half a dozen other states, you know what, dropping $48 million into state Senate races, not federal Senate, you could literally change the outcome in multiple states across the country. You could save abortion rights for women in multiple states across the country. You could change redistricting. You could change representation in the House. I mean, you could do so much with that money for the presumed goal that you're up there talking about.
You could give a UBI to 48,000 people.
You could do that, and that would be a waste of money, too. But you could have had genuine political impact. And the idea that, I mean, frankly, when Bernie was asked, do you think that billionaires should be existed, he should have just gone like this. Look at that guy. Do you know he spent $47 billion to get on this stage? $47 million?
Bernie is too nice. People are always saying that.
All right, let's get to the clips. The more I think about it, the more enraged I get. I mean, it's just sort of, it's grotesque to see that type of, I mean, it's grotesque. see that type of money, that just that level of incompetence.
It's pure narcissism.
It's pure narcissism, but it's so incompetent too. Like, you know, I could totally get being a narcissist. Great. But why not just be the guy who like walk around? Like, you could be the guy who walks around and says like, oh yeah, I changed the outcome of four states.
Dude,
you
always say it yourself. He's literally expressing himself. It is
high
a
on his own supply.
Pure. I mean, it's one thing, yes, like, oh, I'm the power behind the throne or whatever, but this is pure, unmitigated. Like, I always wanted to do this since I was a kid, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, join a local theater company.
Really? There are two clips I want to play first about with Bernie. This was the only exchange with Biden that Bernie had that was, you know, basically... I wouldn't say an attack on Biden, but to some extent, an attack. And Bernie and Warren still studiously, it appears, are attempting to not attack Joe Biden. And which leads me to believe that they both believe that Biden will fade. And they don't want to alienate his voters. Presumably older African Americans who are a big part of Joe Biden's base of support. And there may be a sense that older voters and just older voters in general, right? I mean, Bernie's not doing great with older voters as well. Warren is looking for those from Biden. And I suspect they feel that older voters get a little bit put off by attacks. That's why you've seen what happened to Kamala Harris, what happened to Castro. But this is the one instance where I think Bernie could not help himself. Warren has stuff in the chamber for Biden when the time comes, I think. But I don't know if she'll ever unleash it. But here is Bernie.
For a total of 4 months. 4 months. Where do you get the rest? Where does it come from?
Two things.
Let me Senator respond. Sanders, respond.
In two ways. Joe, sure. You talked about working with Republicans and getting things done. But you know what you also got done? And I say this as a good friend. You got the disastrous war in Iraq done. You got a bankruptcy bill, which is hurting middle-class families all over this country. You got trade agreements like NAFTA and PNTR with China done, which have cost us 4 million jobs. And let's get to Medicare for all. Let's be honest. We spend twice as much per person as do the people of any other major country on earth. And the answer is, if we have the guts, and I would like to see the Democratic Party have that guts, to stand up to the drug companies and the insurance companies and tell them that the function of health care is to guarantee care to all people, not to make $100 billion in profit. If
Thank
we
you,
stood together, we could create a great...
All right. And that last part where Bernie pivots to it quite quickly after basically saying, Joe Biden, you've gotten some stuff done with Republican stuff that you shouldn't be very proud of. He pivots to the appeal that he made multiple times throughout the night. And we will we'll play a clip of that in a moment. He appeals to Democrats to sort of take a position on this. Let's be the party that is for guaranteeing everyone health care. Guaranteeing means not only can you not lose it, it's there, regardless of if you have $20 in your pocket or not. And that was the theme that Bernie hit multiple times. Here is one of those moments where Bernie Sanders in the night basically, again, calls on the Democrats there to stop messing around and just go for the gold. Like, why? There is no reason to believe there's a single plan being offered by anybody on that stage who has, the chances of getting any of it passed through a Republican-controlled Senate. And So if the bottom line is we're going to have a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president to pass this, whatever plan it is, then the question becomes, which Democrats are going to stand in the way and why? There is no great constituencies out there for people who don't want free at point of service health care. There's no constituency out there that is like, I want the ability to fill out forms and send it in. Now, if you're very wealthy, you probably don't do that. You probably hire somebody to do it, or your assistant does it. I don't know who does it. Here's Sanders basically calling on the entire stage of folks to embrace this just on a moral level.
Senator Sanders, do you want to respond?
I get a little bit tired, I must say. Are people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel? 87 million uninsured, 30,000 people dying every single year, 500,000 people going bankrupt. For what reason? They came down with cancer. I will tell you what the issue is here. The issue is whether the Democratic Party has the guts to stand up to the healthcare industry, which made $100 billion in profit, whether we have the guts to stand up to the corrupt, price-fixing pharmaceutical industry, which is charging us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And if we don't have the guts to do that, if all we can do is take their money, we should be ashamed about
that.
It was so good. So much clarity.
The only thing missing from that, and it is a little bit nitpicky, is, you know, the hospitals, which remains a big problem.
A little bit nitpicky.
From a policy standpoint, I mean, it's hugely important. But from a rhetorical standpoint, I mean, I think like we all get the picture, right? There are people who are profiteering off of the misery of other human beings. They're just doing it in the guise of being a hospital. and they're doing it in the guise of investor-owned hospitals, more often than not. And they're doing it for the purposes of maximizing shareholder value. And so they are immiserating people. They are putting them in bankruptcy. They are keeping them insecure. We also know, I should know, our employee-based health insurance is a way of controlling their employees. Because, you know, the big riddle is like, for years, you know, back in 2008, 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, you'd hear all the time, whenever healthcare came up, you would hear some figure like $2,300 of every car that comes off of GM's lot. It's paying for the healthcare of retirees or something, whatever it was, some healthcare plan. And so you would think that business, private business, would be the first in line to say, yeah, like even if I'm paying as a business, even if I'm paying the same amount in taxes, maybe if I'm even paying a little bit more in taxes than I would in that healthcare, the administrative costs of all that would be much easier for me to deal with. I would save money, because the reality is they probably would save money, these businesses. But that's not the only value proposition for them in this. It is also that they basically have leverage over their workers. We see it in the GM strike. And you see it all the time. Like, you want to leave this job? You don't want to get paid? Good luck. Hope your kid stays healthy. Be a real shame if something happened to your kid.
Sick kid.
And so that is a big part of this. But there's no reason why the people on that stage couldn't be supporting this stuff. They want to differentiate themselves, and it's a little bit appalling, but I guess it's just a part of what you have to do. And I love the fact that Joe Biden, in that first, like, as soon as Bernie said, like, we're defending these people, and he sort of smiles.
Yeah.
And then And then he realizes, like, oh, he's talking about people like, dying, not being covered.
I'm not at a Comcast fundraiser.
I noticed that, too. Let's watch that again.
Senator Sanders, do you want to respond?
I get a little bit tired, I must say. Are people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel? 87 million uninsured, 30,000 people dying every single year.
I don't understand why Joe Biden did that.
Joe Biden's just like, yeah, coffee shop talk. Hey, look at the hippie over here. He wants to defend people. Ha! Oh, I guess I'm not at a Verizon fundraiser.
All of his hands are like, Joe, cover your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Hide those Hunter's in the back like, Dad, Trumpers.
Hunter's in the back like, Dad, I gave up an awesome Chinese deal to do this, man. Don't blow it. It's a lot of money, bro. Right,
exactly.
Come on. Don't laugh at the people dying. I know he's a stupid old hippie, but you're on stage, Dad. Oh, it's my brother's wife. Awesome.
I mean, and Joe Biden did come out yesterday and say that his family has agreed not to take any jobs on foreign boards if he becomes president. And
you better get me something back on Amtrak, Dad.
Well, that's
the whole
thing.
Leaving a lot of money on the table.
What are they? They're not going to have to travel to Ukraine at that point.
Is Exxon,
stay on any company,
is Exxon made in America?
Let me be your Jared.
Hey, Dad. Dad, what about Budweiser? Dad.
Meanwhile,
can
Hunter,
I do coke in the White House, though?
Meanwhile,
leaving a lot of money on the table, bro.
Hunter is, I think, my age. But
Dad!
But here is, so Joe Biden,
he's still
cannot,
Joe Biden's elder son.
Well, yeah, and Joe Biden's still Joe Biden. And he can't help but smile when he's accused of protecting a dysfunctional business. And he just can't help himself but lie and condescend in the exact same moment. Here is Joe Biden as Elizabeth Warren is talking about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. David Dayen, who has spent months back in the day reporting on the financial crisis, quoted a guy who wrote the literally wrote a book about the financial crisis, saying that Joe Biden was not a player at all involved in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He showed up for the signing and that was it. But listen to the guy not just lie about his role in it, but condescend to Warren about it simultaneously. That's impressive stuff, folks. Because you got to be, you're getting high on your own supply. That's really what's going on there.
I agreed with the great job she did. And I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too. Hunter,
pause it.
Senator Warren, do you want to respond?
That is not accurate, according to all of the journalists who covered it and the people who have literally written about it. But whatever.
I got you votes. Dad, you're not talking to me. That's Elizabeth Warren. Why are you so mad?
Good.
I agreed with the great job she did. And I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
And she knows. She knows he's full of it right here. And she's mad about it. And she's trying to continue. You watch this.
I am deeply grateful to President Obama, who fought so hard to make sure that agency was passed into law. And I am deeply grateful to every single person who fought for it and who helped pass it into law. But
thank you.
Understand.
You did a hell of a job of your job.
Thank you. But
understand. Well, in addition to mansplaining, he's going to pat her on the head now.
Yep. And I have to say, there was a lot communicated in that thank you.
So petulant.
Like, right?
single person who fought for it and who helped pass it into law. But understand.
You did a hell of a job of your job.
Thank you. But
Bernie's
understand
just like, Jesus
this.
Fucking Christ.
It was a dream big, fight hard.
Joe.
People told me, go for something little. Go for something small. Go for something that the big corporations will be able to accept.
Thank you, Senator.
No, let's go for an agency that will make structural change in our economy. And
Senator,
President Obama said, I will fight for that. And he sometimes had to fight against people in his own administration. We have to be willing to make good structural change.
Bernie's like, I'm 99% of the people embarrassed on behalf of other people in this room right now.
Exactly.
Did you see his hand go for his tie? He's like, ew.
Whoa, boy.
Joe,
I understand your virility is rapidly leaving your body and your brain.
Did a hell of a job of your job.
Gotta calm down. That's definitely
a new
drop.
Yeah, we can do a drop.
Did a hell of a job of your job.
How? Can you guys play that next time I skip work?
And she knows. She knows what role he played there. And as I think like, I mean, that was a sort of a very telling moment, I think, about her as a candidate and as just an operator. Like she could have said, yes, and I thank you, Joe, and then moved on. But she knew he was lying. I would be very surprised if he wasn't one of the obstacles, frankly, to what she was doing based upon who his constituency is.
So there's a mixed report on this from Ryan Grimm, which is interesting. Biden did nothing. Absolutely did not help. Now, for whatever reason, Biden's economic
Kaufman.
Team.
Kaufman.
A Kaufman, but Jared Bernstein specifically backed her extremely strongly. So Biden had the most progressive people around him in the White House with regards to economic policy, which I guess is a credit to him because at the end of the day, he did staff with them. But it was them, not him.
Yeah. The idea that he was out there getting votes on the floor.
Dude.
Not the case.
No.
I wouldn't be surprised if Jared Bernstein was helping in terms of the development of it. But from the political aspect, she was very clear. She could have said, yes, thank you, Joe. But she made a very strong point of like, I thank everybody who is involved.
I mean, she's not going to say this, obviously, right. Because there's no, you know, because it would benefit Sanders and she's not going to want to attack Obama. But I believe the real story is not only did Joe not help when Obama was finally convinced to do this. He wasn't necessarily a yes. You know, she was rightfully pissed that he wasn't going to appoint her. And there's a meeting where Sanders is campaigning for her to get the head of the CFB. Obama looks at Sanders apparently and he goes, see, this is a problem. Progressives, you always think the glass is half empty. You're getting the agency, but you're upset because she's not going to get the head of it.
Right.
And Bernie looked at him. He's like, Jesus Christ, you're a prick.
There you go.
Okay. So
Bernie supports women.
Biden did not help, but his economic team did, which is interesting. People like Kaufman and Bernstein are interesting relative to Biden's record.
Here is both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren both attacked the protection of billionaires. First, here is Bernie Sanders on taxing billionaires. Let's play this one.
And you introduced your wealth tax, which would tax the assets of the wealthiest Americans. You said, quoting you, Senator, billionaires should not exist. Is the goal of your plan to tax billionaires out of existence?
When you have a 500,000 Americans sleeping out on the street today, when you have 87 million people uninsured or underinsured, when you got hundreds of thousands of kids who cannot afford to go to college and millions struggling with the oppressive burden of student debt. And then you also have three people owning more wealth than the bottom half of American society. That is a moral and economic outrage. And the truth is we cannot afford to continue this level of income and wealth inequality.
and we cannot afford a billionaire class whose greed and corruption has been at war with the working families of this country for 45 years. So if you're asking me, do I think we should demand that the wealthy start paying the wealthiest, top one-tenth of 1%, start paying their fair share of taxes so we can create a nation and a government that works for all of us? Yes, that's exactly what I believe.
Now, technically, the question was actually, do you think we should tax billionaires out of existence? And the short answer to that is yes. I can see to a certain extent, I mean, I think the fact that he doesn't feel comfortable just saying that, yes, I think is probably a function of a like a diseased society that we have on some level where, you know, like there would be some type of offense. Like, well, wait a second. You can't. That's so wrong. It's an affront on freedom to tax a billionaire out of existence to where they would just be a 100 millionaire. First of all, it's just a bizarre like threshold to say like is where freedom lies. Right. I mean, the idea that we would have confiscatory taxes is for some reason. Well, first of all taxes are confiscatory on some level. But one that is aimed just to be confiscatory is also about maintaining some like remote and very remote semblance of political equality. And the ability to allow the directions our society move in to be at least remotely determined by all the people who live in society. I mean, we have seen the damage that can be done by billionaires based upon even their best of intentions. Even if I don't believe that Bill Gates didn't see an emerging market in schools, and therefore, I mean, and I don't know whether to believe that or not, but let's just assume that every single dollar that Bill Gates spent on reforming education, quotation marks, was spent with the purest of intentions. And he was able to divorce the way that he, well, he's not able to do that. For the purest of intentions, they spent $750 million, $250 million, on enhancing school education. By doing that, they convinced a lot of other money to follow suit. They convinced an entire country to pursue these notions of high stakes testing, of a way of measuring value added to teachers. And at the end of this experiment, after literally school district after school district pursued grants and whatnot, after the entire country, in many respects, changed their perspective of how to assess education and what to do with it, they did a study. The RAND Corporation, is that what it is? RAND? Is that the one of the? They did it at the end of 2018, maybe it was, or the end of 2017, I can't remember. And they found that their experiment was an absolute failure. And in fact, that the RAND said, we should listen to educators more, and we should basically do what they've been saying this whole entire time. It was a big oopsie. It was barely reported in the press, if at all. I mean, I remember when we were talking about it, and I was certainly looking around. Is anybody going to even acknowledge the fact that a billionaire was able to take our entire education system and drive it into an iceberg and then just walk away going like, boop, my bad.
I tried.
Going to give me points for that. On to the next thing. If you have one person or three families or five families who have the ability to change the direction of policy in this way, it is not only incredibly undemocratic, but more often than not will be a complete disaster because it will not bring in a sufficient number of people who are involved in that area. And you get disasters like this.
May I do a slight tangent on Bill Gates? New New York Times piece, very conservatively reported. Bill Gates went to great efforts to minimize his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Putting it out there.
Well, okay. But that is
a tangent. I said that. Right. I told you.
I think it's
worth noting.
But the bottom line is that, and then of course, you know, from a political standpoint, I mean, it's not, there's no difference there. Political, I mean, that is a political standpoint. That is just a broad swath of society that was just driven into a
people's feedback loops get interrupted.
In addition to all of that stuff being true, as I've said time and again, billionaires aren't billionaires because they worked a billion times harder than everyone else. They're billionaires because they got other people to work for them and they exploited them. And other people's work made that money, and it's not asking too much to get some of it back.
I totally agree. And that is like a fairness question on some level. But even if we had an example of a billionaire who somehow, well, they can't, right? I mean, I'm basically saying like if we had the ability for someone to fly, if I had wings, I would be able to fly. But it's not just a question of fairness in whether they deserve the money or not. Because of course, it's not possible for someone to deserve that money. You get it because you're lucky. I don't even feel like I deserve the money that I make doing this. Nobody deserves anything. Nobody who's in Syria right now deserves to have lost their home. Nobody deserves to have their parents or their children killed.
I mean, workers do deserve the fruits of their labor.
Well, I think to a certain extent, of course. But I mean, there's no question of deserving. There's a question of fairness. But this notion of deserving. The bottom line is society, it is dysfunctional for society. It is anti-democratic and it is dysfunctional to allow people to have this much wealth, which inevitably allows them to have an outsized amount of political power. And
I think the different messages will resonate differently with different people. Some people might respond better to this is what's going to be better for society. And some people might respond better to these assholes stole something from you and we're going to get it back.
Right. And it's we're sitting on a time now where there's a report where for the first time ever, workers are paying a higher tax rate than investors and owners. Play this, this graph. The first time ever. And understand, and this is a function, Manuel Saez and Gabriel Zuckman of University of California, Berkeley, their new book, Triumph of Injustice, present data that's showing in 2018, labor income was taxed at a higher rate than capital income for the first time in modern U.S. history. The proximate cause of the shift was the 2017 Tax Cuts and Job Act, which dramatically slashed taxes on corporate profits and on estates, both forms of capital income. This is according to their analysis. They note, however, that the trend has been happening for decades, driven in part by the large part by the same forces that have pushed billionaires' tax rates below that of the working class. From the 40s to the 80s, the average tax rate on capital exceeded 40%, while labor paid less than 25%. Since its peak in the 50s, however, the average capital tax rate has been cut by 20 percentage points. At the same time, labor taxation has risen by more than 10 points, driven by the upsurge in payroll taxes. I mean, this is just absurd. And understand what this also represents is not only a tremendous amount of, obviously of unfairness and instability. We're giving capital so much free stuff. Right? Like all the services that they use, all of the features of society that have worked so well for them in allowing them to accrue that much wealth, they are getting at a discounted rate and we are paying for it. Like they say, there's no free lunch. They're getting a free lunch and we're paying for it. And look, that's the way society works.
Well, it's a snowball effect. right? The more money they have, the more power they have, the more power they have to amass even more money.
Indeed. Indeed. But they also have been set up. We have, you know, since 1980, you can see it right there. I mean, the graph is right there, even in maybe 1970, mid-70s. You can see that the context is set up there. And of course, I can accrue more money. You give me free stuff, I will accrue more money. If you guys are all here free and somebody's going to send me, you know, half a dozen of audio editors and video editors and send it to me for free, more free services, this office becomes free. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to amass more wealth, and I'm going to do it more quickly, and I'm going to do it more efficiently, and I'm going to be able to increase the rate in which I acquire more wealth because I'm getting free stuff.
That's what capitalism is.
All right, we're going to take a break.
Free stuff for some.
Speaking of which, and we'll create billionaires out there, so we're not going to give you any more of the show for free. So I'm sorry, Tom Steyer. Go get your free political content somewhere else.
More like Tom Don't Tryer.
Yeah. Sort of like that. Folks, we're going to head into the fun half. We've got a little more footage on the debate. We've got more on the big announcement and the implications of the squad, three quarters of the squad endorsing Bernie Sanders. This is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal in a multitude of ways. It's going to be a big deal because they're going to go out there and they're going to campaign extensively. AOC, top three fundraisers in the House. And she is now going to have another platform where, you know, the campaign's going to be sending her around. And so this is not only going to, she's going to build support for Bernie Sanders, but she's going to be building support for a new generation of people to make sure that whatever Sanders built, regardless of what happens with the presidential campaign, that there's going to be a movement and and leaders for this movement going forward. And that is huge. That is, I think, hugely important, and will pay dividends. I mean, this is good news for my kids, as far as I'm concerned. So this is going to be really important. It's going to be a big week. We will be talking about that for a while to come. I mean, I it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with AOC out on the campaign trail. And, you know, because you usually don't get this level of, you know, you start to see some of this like when it's in the general election, you start to see surrogates go out and do speeches in front of like 5,000 people, 10,000. Like, I think we're going to see that.
It's going to start earlier.
We're going to see that early.
And I got to tell, I think Ilhan Omar draws several thousand people too.
It's going to be fascinating.
I just want to know.
7,000 urban people, maybe.
Emphasis on urban. I just want to make an honorable mention. I think particularly with regards to Omar, I think her political commitments are very clear. But, you know, Bernie really stood out in his clarity of supporting her when the pile-on was happening. And you could chart a graph from his clear clarity and solidarity to Warren, decent-ish, okay, and then just going down to, I mean, some of the candidates like Gillibrand who dropped out was just awful.
Right.
And so I think, you know, another huge testament to Sanders and to that relationship.
Folks, your support makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show, commercial-free, but you also get the fun half. And occasionally we drop down, you know, some extra bonus content.
You would have got the debate last night.
Oh, yeah, we gave that audio. We're still working out the video stuff. We got shut down by Twitch. We lost our channel.
CNN hates us. We're playing Minecraft.
Screw them. Screw them.
Disgusting.
But we'll be back up on Twitch soon, and we'll get that stuff nailed down. Also, subscribe to the AM Quickie. Did you download the new app? Okay, I think the app has been, we have a new app on Android, and we are waiting for it to get approved on the iPhone. But the news is, I think you're going to be able to get the AM Quickie on the app now, too. So check that out. But in the meantime, go to amquickie.com, sign up, listen to it 5 minutes every morning. Gives you the top headlines in the politics for the day. And very tough to keep on top of all this stuff these days. Believe me, even for me. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Today was Wednesday. Yesterday was Tuesday. However, we had a debate. So in many respects, today is Tuesday.
In a certain sense.
As far as this office is concerned. Isn't that right, Michael?
Indeed. At 6 p.m., live stream with Andre Dumiz, who is a writer for Maclean's, and just an interview with Jagmeet Singh. We're going to be talking about the Caribbean, Canada, Bernie Sanders. Check out the standalone live stream. Very excited to do that. Patrons have heard us talk about exiting extremism before. And then on the main show, a little bit of a update connecting Haiti and Ecuador and the history of World Bank IMF policies. And then Ryan Grimm is coming in studio, and we are talking about the mega endorsements, the debates, and probably getting into Hunter Biden, especially because I think that basically he's the new Mike Flynn Jr. impression, and I'm going to want to milk that. Patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, where we're about to hit our first 82,000 subs. So, and you can find additional standalone streams. Snag your tickets to Philly at World Cafe November 23rd with Crystal Ball, Artesia Balthrop, and Emma Viglin. Link on the homepage.
Jamie.
So this week on the Antifada, we've unlocked a very premium offering for anyone who's not yet a subscriber. It is History is a Weapon, number 4, the pivotal decade, obviously the 1970s, with Matt Chrisman and Sean KB. So going back to that graph we just looked at, they really go into detail about exactly what happened in the 1970s that swung power back from labor to capital. So they talk about how the global crisis upended the golden age of American capitalism, how Richard Nixon rode a wave of aggrievement to become the voice of a silent majority in backlash, and how the uneasy alliance between organized labor and the Democratic Party began to fracture as stagflation undermined the post-war compromise. Check it out, folks.
Oh, folks, Matt will do this. We got to play that that clip. Again, if you have a question about our inside inside joke glossary can help you with, send an email with the subject line memes to majorityreporters@gmail.com. memes@majorityreporters@gmail.com, and we will include it in our glossary. Matt.
Literary hangover. We're going to be doing some Salem witch trial stuff. So check that out, folks.
All right. See you in the fun app.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2,
38, 56, 27. One half, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands
up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.